From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, the most enjoyed host, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, my friend, my producer, my brother, the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my Al Borman to my Tim Allen tool time. Back himself.
Man. Al Borland, yes.
That would be me. I'd be your Tim Allen.
You, the grunt,
Where that came from. Maybe I'm wearing my first flannel this season.
The first flannel of the season. We'll get to that. But yeah, what a great show. Home Improvement Tool Time.
Yes.
And then what was the neighbor, Wilson, right?
Wilson. Yeah. Like you're my Wilson 90% of the time. Because if I'm not looking at you at the monitor,
you could kind
of all
see
I see
face.
Is your face over your computer screen. But I have my monitor.
He was a great neighbor. But yes, we are back here for Bob After Dark.
Yes, and it's almost spooky season's here. It's time. It's here.
It's here. And you're wearing the flannel. But Bob, I got to tell you, the forecast, I think we're back in the 80s.
Can I enjoy it for one day?
One day.
My sinus pressure is killing me today. Yeah. There was part of me who was like, man, I'm not coming to the show. And then I'm like, no, I'm coming to the show. I'm just going to – if I sound out of it, guys, it's a combination of stress and the weather changing drastically.
It goes back and forth. It's on a swing system, I think.
Yes, because I saw it's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow. But
80 degrees, yes.
Without further ado, Bob After Dark, we're your weekly-ish paranormal radio show podcast where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite 90s sitcom.
Oh, man. Well, Home Improvement. There you go. Josh Beaudry in the house.
Hey, Josh, how's it going?
Here for Bob After Dark.
He's here for Bob After Dark.
We have a live studio audience, like a 90s sitcom.
First time I got a live studio audience.
Like a 90s sitcom. There's a live studio.
Yeah, so let's see with 90s sitcom.
We got to put that before the show. Like, Bob After Dark's performed before a live studio audience.
You know what we're going to do?
What's that?
October. Every October, we're going to do a live studio audience.
We have enough room for a live studio audience?
Not in here.
Oh, okay.
The parking lot.
Oh.
I kid you not. I'm inviting all of the fans to start coming out on Tuesday nights to come hang out in the parking lot.
Like a tailgate?
Can
they grill?
Look, I'm not stopping you from grilling. but no, seriously, that's what we're going to do. And I could legitimately say Bob After Dark is recorded in front of a live studio.
You're an old wrestling fan. The WCW Nitro parties.
Oh, my goodness.
Remember they sent in your VHS tape of your Nitro party?
Yes, I've watched several of those over the years.
Did you ever have a Nitro party as a kid?
I was too young.
I would have had a Nitro party.
Oh, I would have. Look, man, if Nitro parties were a thing these days, me and you would have rocked
it. Oh, man, they got to bring back. We could send our VHS tape and they would play it on TV.
They'd play it on TV.
Yeah, it was great. We got Bob After Dark party.
But your favorite 90s sitcoms.
Oh,
man. So never answered.
Let me focus on this. I mean, if we're going 90s, I mean, Seinfeld's up there, right?
Seinfeld's up there. That's a good choice.
Good.
It's tough because you got The Simpsons, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you consider that more of an 80s or 90s thing.
Cheers?
Cheers was not a 90s show.
It didn't end in the 90s, though?
No, because Frasier would have picked back up around then.
Okay.
The Married with Children, I think, is considered more 80s than 90s, maybe.
Let's see.
I appreciate you being able to look it up. But
I do want to see what the
Cheers
TV show
Home Improvement's a good choice. Darkwing Duck is a great – I don't know if Darkwing Duck's considered a sitcom. But
Bob, is an 80s show. Started in 82, but did drift into 93 as well.
Oh, what, so Cheers?
It had a good run.
And then Frasier picked up after that.
Yeah.
Had a longer run than Cheers did.
Was it a Drew Carey show? Was that technically 2000s, though?
That would have been late 90s, early 2000s, in which case I'd say Drew Carey's probably one of my favorite top sitcoms. Anyway, I digress. This isn't Bob After
– Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. That's why I brought it up. But, I don't know where that came from. It was the flannel. It had to have been. But, this isn't Bob After – Applause. This is Bob After Dark.
Oh, we need an applause sign in here, too.
Can we get an applause? I'm telling you, man, we're every Tuesday throughout the month of October, I'm inviting all the fans to come hang out in the parking lot. Why not? Dude, I'll come out and sign autographs.
That's true.
I think it's a great idea. I'm willing to bet we could get one fan to come sit out in the parking lot.
Well, get a lawn chair. Bring your lawn chairs.
Or you could just sit out in your car, turn your radio on.
You could do that too. All right, people want to.
It's kind of like a drive-in, a drive-in, right? Come get entertained and come meet your fellow Bob After Dark fans. Yeah. I like this plan.
All right.
I digress. If the first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, or your weekly-ish paranormal show, and I was saying, Legends Learn Supernatural, we divide up the show into two parts. First part of the show is where we talk a little bit about some weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, or me, the Bob, go digging throughout the interwebs to find the strangest news online. Anything from, weird ghost sightings making it into major media reports, cryptid stuff, UFO sightings, weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction, or the fact that there's aliens, because where we're going to be kicking off this week at. But Count Panic doesn't know what we're talking about for the news 98% of the time, so he gets to come and give us his hashtag Panic's take, and then we dive into Dr. Ben Vanderson straight from his tales, the lore of the week, and we're looking forward to that. But let's dive right into the news story. You ready?
Yeah, let's
Your weekend update.
Oh, Bob, I tell you, the weekend update.
Somebody will get grumpy with me if I don't ask.
There's somebody out there, but the weekend update, it was a good weekend there, Bob. I took in an old football game, the Count did.
Did you play?
No, Bob. I'm past that point. But Notre Dame here.
Golden Dome, yeah.
The Golden Dome, yeah.
That's exciting.
The Fighting Irish, Bob. Are you Irish? I forget.
Oh, Polish, through and through.
I know, but is there a 1%
nope.
Irish? No.
Irish by curiosity, I guess.
Curious.
I don't want to say curiosity. By association?
Yeah.
I drink, on the St. Patrick's Day, I enjoy a Guinness. I enjoy the lore of Ireland, and I enjoy, the culture of the Irish culture
Leprechaun.
A lot. But I am not Irish myself.
No.
I am a Polish man through and through with some German and Lithuanian thrown in there.
I tell you, though, the leprechaun, not the Mobile Alabama
leprechaun, but the real, the fighting Irish leprechaun over in Notre Dame.
That was a good time.
You ever see the movie Rudy?
I saw Rudy.
Did you know that my house was in Rudy?
Was your house? Because they filmed it
in Whiting.
Really? So you could see your house?
My childhood home, you could see in the background in Rudy, believe it or not. I digress.
Were you in the filming process?
Dude, don't even think I was born yet. I think my brother was at the park when they were shooting it, though, at the beginning of that prairie.
He knows
Rudy. Over there. When did Rudy come out?
He knows Rudy personally.
Rudy came out in 93, so I would have, let's say 2 or 3 years old I would have been when the movie came out, depending on the month.
Well, yeah, they probably filmed it, a year ahead or so?
Something. All right, you ready to dive into the show?
Sure.
All right, so
boy, did you do anything on your weekend?
My entire past 2 months has been merged into one long nightmare.
Oh man.
So no. I didn't do anything exciting.
Well, you're traveling a lot.
I have been. I got a chance to play a little disc golf, I think.
Yeah.
That was fun. I've been mostly just existing.
Existing is the plus. You gotta exist.
All right. So after we got done recording last week's episode, there was some breaking news. And maybe you've seen it. Maybe you've talked
about it. Yeah, what's this about?
We're going to dive into the spooky news of the week, by the way. So our first news story is coming to us from the NY Post, New York Post. This is written by Melissa Koeing, K-O-E-I-N-G. Mexico's leaders brought out corpses that were apparently real alien corpses.
I saw this.
Did you see this?
What's this about, though?
Okay,
is this real?
There are doctors that have started studying them, okay? Now, I wish this would have... Literally, the news broke the day after we recorded last week's episode, so it's not like... So, let me catch you up to speed. Let me read this post here, and this is, Mexican doctors conclude tests on alleged non-alien corpses. Here's what they determined. Mexican doctors have found no evidence of assembly or manipulation of the skulls of the so-called non-human beings remains that were presented to Mexico Congress last week, seemingly proving that the remains were not human-made. The scientists conducted a number of tests on two specimens at the NOAA clinic on Monday and live-streamed the entire procedure on Jaime Musan's YouTube channel. In the end, Jose Zalche Benelis, the director of Health Science Research Institute in the Center of Mexican Navy's office. It's a lot of words at once, so I apologize. Mm-hmm. Said the studies proved the alleged aliens belonged to a single skeleton and were not assembled with human objects. He also said that the team found that one was alive, was intact, was biological, and was in gestation, pointing to large lumps inside the alleged ET's abdomen, which he suggested could be eggs. I can confirm that these bodies have no relation to human being, he previously claimed. The pair, which were allegedly unearthed in Cusco, Peru in 2017, have elongated heads with three fingers on each hand. A group of scientists in Mexico conducted these tests on alleged alien specimens presented to the Congress last week. And they ran MRIs. It's not like, you know, bogus medical research. But otherwise, other than being, they're approximately about 3 to 4 feet in height. Mm-hmm. Heads are elongated, much like the crystal skulls that exist on the planet. So very similar skeleton structure. And it's elongated face as well. So it's very close to what a classic gray looks like.
Yeah.
But these things are a little different, more crystal head-like. But otherwise, they appear humanoid in shape with two arms and two legs. We could assume they were bipedal. Musan said they had strong, light bones and no teeth and had implants of cadmium and osmium, which is one of the scarcest elements on Earth. Almost one-third of their DNA is unknown, he testified, claiming the beings are not part of our terrestrial evolution. These specimens are not part of our evolutionary history of Earth, Musan told Mexican government officials and representatives from the U.S. They are not beings recovered from a UFO crash. Instead, they are found in algae mines and subsequently became fossilized. This is the first time extraterrestrial life is presented in such a form, and I think it is a clear demonstration that we are dealing with non-human specimens that are not related to any species in our world, Musan, a long UFO enthusiast, concluded. But many have a lot of skepticism about this discovery. For years, academics, archaeologists, and scientists have said that the mummified remains of the UFO enthusiasts claim are aliens are generally modified human bodies. Others, especially smaller ones like the ones that are presented in Mexico, are assembled with an amalgamation of animal and human bones. So they believe that these bodies were creation out of other, you know, dead organisms. Among the skeptics is physics professor Brian Cox, who has been calling for a sample to be sent to a biologic tech company 23andMe for independent verification that the specimens were aliens, Sky News reports. It is very unlikely that an intelligent species that evolved on another planet would look like us, he said last week. I would argue. Have you seen the pictures of these things?
I've seen the pictures.
So you're at least caught up to
I
that.
See
Look,
what
I'm
they,
almost
yeah.
done with the article.
Oh, sure.
I want to get your opinion. Yeah. Julieta Ferraro, a scientist at Mexico's National Autonomous University's Institute of Astronomy, also said that none of the evidence shows anything mysterious that could not indicate life compounds that do not exist on Earth. And the Peruvian government has claimed the remains are simply pre-Hispanic objects. Still, the Mexican politicians said last week that Musan's presentation left them with thoughts and concerns as they weigh the passing of the Aerial Space Protection Law, which would turn Mexico into the first country in the world to acknowledge the presence of aliens on this planet.
How about
Hashtag
that?
Panics take.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal there, Bob. And I have seen the photos. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the photos by this point, but I mean, it's what you think alien might look like. I mean, it's kind of like a dusty, ancient figure, but
exactly,
it's what you think maybe an alien would look like.
I can't, you know, I'm not a scientist, right?
No, I'm not either.
We just play one on radio and TV.
Yeah.
We are pseudoscientists.
Yeah,
but we are men of science at the end of the day, correct?
Sure.
Well, that wasn't a very.
Yeah, I mean,
we're men of science at the end of the day. We try to keep a clear head about things.
Got it.
I have a problem with this, man. I don't necessarily believe they look human enough to be considered human remains. What's your take?
No, I don't think they look I don't think they look human at all. They look like I said, what you would think a movie alien would look like. This looks like a movie
exactly.
alien.
Exactly. It looks like a gray, tinier, smaller gray creature.
Yeah.
I understand the skeptical beliefs that where am I at with this? I can understand the skeptics. Mm-hmm. I could say, you know, these mummified remains look like an art project, right?
Yeah.
I'm with you there. Yeah. I don't necessarily think 23andMe is the maybe I'm wrong. Is that the proper company to be sending these things to?
I mean, they're probably the most popular.
I know that, but like, don't get me wrong, 23andMe, if you're looking to sponsor a paranormal podcast, holla at your boy.
Yeah.
But are they the correct answer to like study these things? What about like other scientific groups? You know?
I would say get every scientist you can think of and get them on this project.
Can we poke our friends at the Challenger? I'm curious what their thoughts are on this.
Yeah, I could ask about that.
Because they're saying that if they're not here, they wouldn't have any human characteristics. Do these things look human to you?
I mean, the feature, I mean, they don't look human, but I mean, you can see clearly it's the face.
Humanoid.
The body. Yeah, yeah.
They're about as human as saying Mothman's human. It's a humanoid figure.
Sure, yeah, the shape of a, could be a
shape of a human, but that baffles me. I think it's interesting that the skull remains look very similar to that, like I said, of the crystal skulls.
Yep. Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
So you think they're real? Or you think there's somebody that's trying to scam us here? Like a big scam.
Before I give you my answer, I want to know yours. Real or not?
I'm going to say real.
We have a caller?
We got a caller.
Caller, we're going to take you live. I'm assuming you're listening. I need to know your opinion. Are the Mexican aliens real aliens or not?
Hey, good evening there, Bob.
Hey, John. You called it a hot take moment. I need to know, do you think these aliens are real?
I don't think so. To me, it looks like a scene from E.T.
That's fair. That's a fair thing to say. And that's the thing. I can understand the skepticism on if you believe they're not or they are. In my opinion, I'll get to mine in a second, John. You're the caller. You're the star of the show. What's on your mind tonight?
It's just a little phony looking. I mean, I don't know if that's the correct word or not, but it just reminds me of the scene from, scenes that would be seen in the E.T. movie. But anyway, did you see this, that story of that $100 million jet fighter plane disappearing over South Carolina?
I did not. Would you care to tell us about it?
Well, from what I've seen, it's over $100 million jet flight plane that somehow disappeared over the skies of South Carolina, I assume, and they do not know the reason why the pilot ejected himself. He's safe. So, I mean, I don't know how he made it, but they're just finding now the debris of some of the plane in the sky and on the ground. But the actual rest of the plane, they have no idea where it's at.
That's interesting.
So, I saw that too. So they are finding some parts of it though already at this point.
Yeah, supposedly they're finding some parts of it, but it mysteriously disappeared, and they don't know why the pilot ejected himself from the plane. So now I don't know. The pilot's still alive. I guess. I guess they could question him, but I haven't heard that part. If they did any questioning on him, though. But I was just wondering if you heard anything about that.
I haven't. I appreciate you sharing that with me. That's fascinating.
And the last thing, when my dog here, he's a big fan of your show.
Oh, that's the most important fan to me are the puppers.
Yeah, and you know what? When he was taking a little snooze, but when you said that you want a live audience over there, he jumped up and he gave me his leash. I said, no, I said, sometime in October, Bob said.
Yeah,
look,
you bring that dog, the dog can come sit here and host a show with me.
Oh, definitely. You know what, boy, that's the most exciting thing that made our day when you said you wanted a live audience. So,
We got one, John. I appreciate that.
Well, you know what? Maybe Mr. J-Pack is listening.
Look, the parking lot's wide open, guys. Come and hang out. Say hi to your fellow Bob After Dark fans.
He'll be number two, and maybe he's got a take on that airplane. He's a Vietnam veteran, so we'll see if he calls. So.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for calling
in,
John.
Good show, Bob.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you.
I know we'll get back to the alien stuff, but what do you think when spacecrafts, like, you know, the Amelia Earhart situation, when they just go missing?
We talked about Amelia Earhart.
Did we spend a whole topic, though, a whole show on that one?
Did we talk about Amelia Earhart? No, we talked about the plane. They think they found part of the plane.
It's like a story, but I mean.
Yeah, we had a segment.
But like the Bermuda Triangle and stuff. Like, I mean, this is a whole topic,
I think. That's a whole topic of an episode.
That could be a whole show, the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about that story. But yeah. I don't know. Do we have another caller?
No.
Oh, you were looking over there.
I was just looking at the Bermuda Triangle.
You were looking. Ah, man. I'm stuck on these aliens.
Yeah, what's going on? So you didn't say if you think it's real or fake. Or really fake.
It's hard for me to say because I am stuck on the skeptic side because, okay, we've been doing this long enough, right? Yeah. You and I look at evidence all the time of things, and it's easy to poke holes in these types of things. I'm not familiar with Mexico's government enough to say, like, they are more inept to take conversations like this lightly. Like, do you know how I'm saying is, like, these people are presenting this to the Mexican government, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to, like, do something to really woo them. We got a caller?
We do have a caller.
All right, caller, you're on the line.
Caller? Okay, we'll take a call.
Hello.
Hi there. Who are you?
I'm Mark.
Hi, Mark. Where are you calling from?
Chicago.
Ah, Mark from Chicago. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I want to weigh in about the aliens.
Ah, real or not?
I want to say they're real, but at the same time, there's so many compelling arguments that they look like they're made out of paper mache.
Yes, or, you know, a weird art project using remains of animals and stuff. That's
right, like a taxidermy experiment gone wrong.
Exactly. So, where are you at then? You got it, or are you just kind of in the middle?
I believe they're real. I want to believe they're real because it's just too convenient to finally come out with this right after we have announced that aliens are real. You know, we've got the Pentagon saying UFOs are real. So we have to have some kind of proof. Someone's got proof that there's aliens, right?
That's what I was getting at. Are people more comfortable now since the congressional hearing to come forward with these types of pieces of evidence?
I think even if we had an alien land on the White House front lawn today, there would still be people saying that it was fake. Then they're skeptics. There'll be skeptics about it no matter – it doesn't matter.
You're absolutely correct.
Because that's where I feel with that. Like, I believe that that very well could be an alien. We don't know. It's going to look weird because it's not earthly biology. It's not going to look – maybe on their planet when they shrivel up, it is like a paper mache consistency. We don't know.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Mark from Chicago. We appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
But could it be there, Bob, that they're just so ancient that they look like they're made out of paper?
All right. We were building up suspense to Bob's response. I think they're real.
Okay.
I know I probably have some skeptics like slapping their face right now being like, of course Bob's saying they're real. I need you to know that I am struggling. I've been struggling since I've heard this news. I have struggled.
It's kept you up in
it. It really has. It's like, you know, there's things like the Gary Witch where I blatantly know it's not real, or certain of the, you know, paranormal experiences just aren't real. It's, you know, I could say both ways that it's convenient that these things came out right at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you being dragged away by the government as we speak? But anyway, I don't know how the Mexican government operates to the point where, like, are they willing to take full-on hearings like this? You know, in America, if I went to, you know, Congressman Mervin's office and been like, here's an alien corpse, they're probably going to laugh at me.
They could, yeah, they'd
possibly laugh at me, you know. So I don't know how seriously they take these types of things. That's not a slight at them by any means. I'm just explaining I don't know. But I'm going to assume there's some sort of vetting process like you'd have here, right?
You would think so. I mean, there's got to be a process behind
So they took it seriously to the point where they're considering, like, an actual, like, real ET, extraterrestrial UAP phenomena task force, like a real government-sanctioned one. And it'll be the first country in the world that that is acknowledging that.
Yeah.
On a government level, because even after our congressional hearing.
Well, even don't forget, Bob, that there's been little nuggets of alien talk throughout the past couple of years here.
Yeah.
And we have reached out to Congressman Mervan about a year or so ago. He wished me a happy birthday and said he had nothing to do with these congressional hearings. So
of course he was. At least he answered.
Yeah.
So I think they're real, man. I think they're real. And I think you're going to see more come forward over the next year.
Okay, I'll be waiting.
I truly believe, and you're going to see a lot of fake nonsense. You will. So remember to keep your own vetting process open. Do your research. Look into it. Know what bipedal means. Know what humanistic means. That's the only way you're going to stay on top of this, because this is the closest we're going to get to mass hysteria. This is the closer we get to this, right?
Yeah.
Food for thought. You ready to move on?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So our next news story is a weird advancement in science that borderlines on science fiction. Comes to us from Oddity Central. The world's smallest commercially available camera is out now. And guess how big it is?
How big is it?
The size of a grain of salt.
The size of a grain of salt.
1 grain of salt, Count Panic.
Okay.
The Omnivision OVM6948 camera cube chip incorporated holds the record for the world's smallest commercially available camera. It measures at 0.65 millimeters by 0.65 millimeters with a Z height of 1.158 millimeters. That is a grain of salt. Tiny. Developed by Omnivision, a global technology company specializing in innovative advanced digital imaging, analog and touch and display solutions for multiple applications across several industries. The camera cube chip is based on tiny OVM6948 sensor, which claimed the Guinness Book of World Records for the smallest commercially available image sensor. It can be mounted to various medical instruments, including disposable guide wires, endoscopes, and catheters with diameters as small as 1 millimeter. Hmm. It is impressively small size to make it perfectly used for the body's narrowest blood vessels for neuro, ophthalmic, ENT, cardiac, spinal, urology, gynecology, and arthroscopy procedures. Hmm. This thing is small. And apparently,
grain of
rice. You would think this thing would be like crap, right? Like some tiny camera's not going to give you good quality.
Yeah.
Ah, my friend, it offers a 200 by 200 or 40 pixel backside illuminated resolution, producing high quality images of some of the most sensitive areas of the human body. So when it says it's commercially available, you're not going to buy this. You can. I hate to see what the price tag is on this.
Yeah.
But you can. Oh, I can tell you right now what the price is.
What is it?
So small that I can't just go and buy it. I have to call and like
specialty item.
You have to call and get it specially ordered.
Not for Christmas
or
anything.
For medical uses such as that, that is extremely fascinating. That we are getting technology so small now, like that we can legitimately like fit into parts of the body. But again, we're back to the old concept of shoving AI bots and things like that in the bodies and getting closer and closer to full-blown androids.
Yeah.
That is scary stuff, man.
It is.
Hashtag panics take.
I agree, Bob. You know, it's weird about these cameras, too. Sometimes they get these cameras. You get a clear shot of what's going on in space and whatnot. But yet somebody's security cameras, it looks like it was shot on a potato. At the end of the day, but a grain of rice, a camera and a grain,
tiny,
the size of a grain of rice,
tiny,
that shoots great video. That's just amazing. That shows us how far we came in technology here in these days, Bob.
I would say. Do we have another caller?
Bob, this might be a record. We have
another caller.
We got a third caller.
We have a third caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, hello. Hello, Bob and the Count.
Hey. Hello. Who are you?
Last week's special caller.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
This is Bill. Yeah.
Hey, Bill, we'll call you on the air. What's on your mind tonight, Bill?
Well, I'm just interested in your conversation and the stories, and I get into this stuff, but it's very interesting.
How about this alien stuff, though? Is it real or is it not?
Do you think the aliens are real?
I think it is. I don't think we're the only ones in the universe here. I think it is real.
I appreciate the input.
They look ancient. I mean, that's the. I think they're real, but they sure they look like paper mache. But that's just it's just what the ancient aliens guys have been saying all the time. You know,
aliens. go on.
Yeah, I haven't seen the pictures or anything, but that's interesting. And then this jet that disappeared. That's interesting also.
How do you lose a jet?
Yeah, how do you lose a jet?
Well, I don't know. The only thing maybe I can think of is maybe, something was wrong with the plane, or something, and that's why the pilot ejected.
That's true, too. But then the plane keeps going, and then nobody knows where it's at. I guess they're finding some pieces now. It was confirmed there. But what a weird thing.
Well, they found some pieces of his plane?
That's what the previous caller there, John, said that. But I think it might still be flying around out there. I'm not sure, which is just terrifying to think about.
It could be. I don't know. But like I say, I'm enjoying the show. You got guys that are doing a good job. And I'm going to think about this parking lot thing here, so.
Bob claims that we could have the parking lot.
Right, people are coming out to the parking lot, man.
So we'll stay posted on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, like I say, I'm enjoying the show, and
thank you so much, guys.
Keep up the good job, and God bless you guys.
You too, sir. You have a good one.
You too.
Folks, right. We have had three callers. I'd like a fourth. 219-845-1100.
Now you're just being crazy.
Look, man, if I get four, that'd be some kind of record, I think. 219-845-1100. I want to hear your take on the aliens being presented to the Mexican government. Call in. I need to know. Are you a skeptic? That's fine. The phone lines are open. 219-845-1100. But the smallest camera bit? I can appreciate advances in science. That's going to solve a lot of problems. As someone who just went through cardiovascular surgery in the past month, I can tell you that it's an interesting take on that. But, man, you keep going smaller and smaller. And my question is, when do you start shrinking people down to get in the bloodstream so they could do internal surgery,
There was a movie like this, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
The Kids, yes. Various other science fiction shows.
Yes.
Oh. All right, last news story comes to us from our old pal Tim Benall. Look, I only relied on Tim once this week. Guest flees haunted Malaysian hotel after 20 minutes due to paranormal activity. A man intending to stay at a notoriously haunted hotel in Malaysia wound up cutting his visit short after a mere 20 minutes due to unsettling paranormal activity in his room. According to a local media report, the chilling incident occurred last week in the village of Bukit Merah, Bukitmerah. Upon entering his room at the supposedly haunted hotel, the unnamed traveler was immediately taken back when the door mysteriously shut behind him and the toilet flushed. We have polite ghost count. I checked to see if anyone was there, but no one was, the man later recalled, explaining that the situation was so unnerving that he actually began praying. In a sign of the times, the traveler subsequently started recording the scene with his cell phone, which seemingly caused the spirit in the room to cease their activity. However, the man ultimately decided that he would rather stay somewhere else, as, oddly enough, he was the only person booked at the hotel that evening, and as such, he feared that he might receive the ghost's undivided attention. That's what I want. Get me booked at a hotel where I'm by myself to conduct my research, please. Upon exiting the hotel room and entering the elevator, the traveler claims he saw an apparition pass down the hall right before the doors closed, which undoubtedly left him feeling that he made the right choice. Recounting the experience in a video that has gone viral since on social media in Malaysia, the man marveled that not even within 30 minutes I was disturbed. Count, we have a caller?
No.
Why are you waving at me then?
I'm not waving at you.
Oh, you're waving your pen.
I'm waving the pen, yeah.
Oh, my bad. No, I'm sorry.
How do you even see that, though?
I prefer it.
I feel like do you have x-ray vision there?
I'm not going to confirm nor deny that I have x-ray vision. Hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, Bob. I mean, again, like all this stuff, it's easy to kind of see the point and believe in this stuff. But I'm still thinking about the – sorry if I'm backtracking here. I'm still thinking about the grain of rice. Technology, as far as, like, the surgeries go, that's perfect. But What is he? It's kind of eerie to know that some of them have a camera the size of a grain of rice. I know I'm flip flopping.
It's fine. You're good. You're good.
But that's just still sticking in my craw. My craw? My craw. Yeah. But this one, too, as well, it's thanks, Tim Banaugh, for that.
You know, that's all I ever wanted in my life. I want to book a haunted hotel, bare minimum people with me.
Yeah.
I'll say like a group of 3 to 5 investigators. I have nobody else with me other than my team of 3 to 5. I could conduct research in peace and quiet. Yeah. I have the run of the hotel to myself to go do whatever I want. That sounds lovely.
That's all you need?
You okay over there?
Yeah, that's all you need?
It's the night. Aren't you supposed to be a vampire? Like, this is your awake time.
This is my awake time.
This is your coffee and breakfast time.
Yeah. What's for breakfast?
You ready to take a quick break?
Now?
I mean, yes.
Sure.
Are you upset by that?
No, we could do it now.
Why were you upset about the break?
I just didn't know. I didn't expect it right now.
Well, I mean, we're done with 3 news articles. That's kind of the
structure
of the show.
That's true, too. You're right. That is the structure of the show.
All right. We'll be right back. To our live fans, stick around. And for our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing a word from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Listeners, this is Piedmont Montgomery of Volumes of Fear. Volumes of Fear is a scripted horror comedy podcast presented by Crimson Knight Productions. If you enjoy tales of terror and the macabre, then Volumes of Fear is certainly for you. Listen now on Apple Podcasts or at soundcloud.com/volumes of fear. Find Volumes of Fear and try to survive the terror that it bestows.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Oh, not too bad. What'd you do during break?
During the break, I went and did the meet and greet in the parking lot with the legions of fans.
How many legions are out there?
There's at least the thousands, Bob.
Thousands of legions outside.
The American Legion. There's a bunch of legions out there. But they're out there, and they're ready to the grill some steaks, and
they're growing steaks in the, like, we gotta be careful, man. You don't need to get staked in the heart.
Well, that's true too. And but don't forget, they kept you in mind, Bob. They're grilling some cheese curds for you.
Grilling cheese curds? You fry cheese curds, bro?
No, there's grills out there.
You're grilling cheese curds. You know, you can grill tofu. You can grill vegetables. Corn on the cob grilled is some of my favorite food in the world. Believe it or not. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm just having a sip of a drink.
Excellent. Would you like to know what I did during break?
What'd you do during break?
You know, I took up a new hobby.
What'd you do?
Chinese checkers.
Really?
Yeah, I've become ranked number 3 NA in Chinese checkers.
Number who are number 2?
Boris Plasky.
Oh.
And Fiona.
Oh, I've heard
Apple.
Her. Fiona Apple.
Fiona Apple.
The famous alternative singer from the 90s?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Fiona Apple.
Who knew that she knew Chinese checkers?
She's ranked number 2 in North America.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's getting close to beating out Boris Plasky.
How much? She's multi-talented, I tell you.
I forgot Fiona Apple is a real person.
Fiona Apple.
I panicked.
And she's a big fan.
Bob After Dark, yeah. Fiona Apple, if you're listening to this, thanks for being a good sport.
We may incorporate musical guests onto the show.
Look, man. If I could turn Bob After Dark into a full, like, late night talk show experience, like TV talk show, where, you know, I have guests, I do the news in front of a big live studio audience, and I have musical acts, that would be really cool.
But would you need, like, spooky acts, or would you have regular acts? Like,
well, I would do, like, you know, horror punk bands.
Horror punk
bands.
You
know, like, some, like, spooky synth, the, you know, DJs.
Bring back the
like
Misfits
that.
To...
the Misfits are in our budget, right?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, so spooky artists, and then you'd be like my sidekick that usually runs the band, like Kevin Eubanks, was that his name on
Tonight
the Tonight Show?
Band. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who was the other gentleman from Letterman? The
bald guy. Paul Schaefer.
Paul Schaefer, yeah. You'd be like my Paul Schaefer.
I just do rambling. Ah!
Man, I could have my own desk with like a coffee mug and I don't drink coffee. I'd have my little water bottle, but I digress.
Yeah.
All right, so ripped right from the pages of Dr. Ben Vanderson's lore, this episode is actually dedicated to Ma.
Mother. Wow.
My mother.
Yeah.
You know what my mother's favorite hobby is in the entire world other than yelling at me?
No, what is that?
Reading. My mom's a big reader, loves to read.
It's fundamental.
My mom could crank out a book in a day.
It's pretty good.
That's impressive. My mom, you know, especially with her being laid up now with the ankle, Yeah, she's running out of books to read. She gets books and she just cranks them out.
I try to do one a year or so.
Did you read your book this year?
No, but we got 3 months left, right?
I was going to say, you
got
to pick up your book. Yeah, did I read a book yet? I did. I read The Stand by Stephen King.
There you go.
But I digress. So my mom's a big reader, and I was thinking about it. I'm like, reading, what could I do here? And, you know, fill in the blank joke of reading Rainbow, right? But yeah. No, I have an article here about 8 supposedly cursed books by April Snellings on mentalfloss.com. Link will be in the description. So all this episode tonight is going to be the lore of the week is dedicated to the 8 cursed books.
Cursed.
We have cursed objects we've talked about on the show. The crying boy painting that could supposedly causes fires.
That's scary.
Yeah. The have you seen this man image that people supposedly dream about this guy's face. Do you hear that weird voice? Did you just hear that weird voice?
No.
You didn't hear that woman's voice?
Is this a...
I'm not joking. That's not a bit. You didn't hear that woman's voice?
No.
Might have been my mom screaming at me from the house for mentioning her. Well, I digress. So let's dive right in to our 9 cursed books.
Sure.
Remember, guys, our phone lines are open, 219-845-1100. And our first cursed book is the Codex Gigas. If cursing power were based solely on a book size, the Codex Gigas, a.k.a. the Devil's Bible, would probably be the most dangerous book ever written. Weighing in at how heavy do you suppose one of the heaviest books on the planet is?
Oh, man. What's the biggest book on the planet? That's my
question. Well, this one here, the Devil's Bible, is 165 pounds.
That's crazy.
And measures 3 feet in height.
How long does it take to read that one?
Well, it's 800 years old, so take it or leave it, right? So the nearly 800-year-old tome is thought to be the world's largest surviving medieval manuscript. Codex Gigas literally means giant book. The manuscript's exact origins have been lost to time, but historians believe it was written at a point between 1204 and 1230 in the Kingdom of Bohemia, part of what would become the Czech Republic. Hmm. According to the National Library of Sweden, the book was owned by at least 3 different monasteries before Emperor Rudolf II added it to his private collection, which in about 1594. In 1648, it was claimed by the Swedish army during the 30 Years' War and was taken to Stockholm. It was housed in Sweden's National Library since 1768. While many illuminated texts were produced by teams of scribes, scholars believe that the Codex Gigas is a work of a single copyist, which is very impressive. Written entirely in Latin, the book contains both the Old Testament and New Testament, along with Czech and Jewish history texts, an encyclopedia with information on geometry, legal matters, entertainment, and among other topics, medical documents, hundreds of obituaries, several magic spells, and a calendar.
A calendar to boot.
Yes. The book's sinister reputation stems from a full-color portrait of the devil contained in its pages, and a legend about how the image got there. According to folklore, the book is the work of a monk, possibly Hermanninus Hermitius, or Herman the Recluse, who had broken his vows and had sentenced to be walled up alive in the monastery. He struck a deal to save himself. If, over the course of a single night, he could write a book containing all of the world's knowledge, his life would be spared. When he realized the task was impossible, the monk sold his soul to the devil, who helped him finish the original book and signed it with the now infamous portrait of the devil in the Codex. Other versions of the story say that the monk added the illustration as a gesture of gratitude for Satan's assistance. There are several tales of misfortune attached to the Codex Gigas, but the curse seems to be fairly benign, considering the book was supposedly co-written by Beelzebub. One legend dating back to at least 1858 maintains that a guard was institutionalized after being accidentally locked in Sweden's National Library overnight. He supposedly found under the table the next morning, claiming to have seen the Kogas Gigas join a procession of books as they danced in the air.
Mm.
What's, are you okay over there? It's kind of spooky, ain't
it? It is spooky, Bob. Just besides being a big book, there's a lot going into this big book here.
Yes, and then our second book is the Book of Soiga. The Book of Soiga, a.k.a. the Olidaria Sive Soiga Vokor, is an occult text that dates back to at least the 1500s. We know about it only because it was once owned by John Dee, a famous 16th century polymath whose fields of studies and expertise included mathematics, physics, chemistry, and astronomy. Dee was also an occultist who was particularly interested in communicating with angels. The Book of Soiga must have been irresistible to him. Besides magic spells and writings about demonology and astrology, the text includes names and genealogies of angels. According to Benjamin Woolley's Dee biography, The Queen's Conjurer, Dee believed that the book contained an ancient, even divine message written in the language only spoken to Adam, which, you know, your biblical history, Adam was one of the first two human creations by God.
Yeah.
But only spoken to Adam, in other words, the true, unspoiled word of God.
That's it.
As physically spoken. Mm. It also includes 36 cryptic tables that remained undeciphered for centuries. Dee attempted to crack their code with the help of Edward Keeley, a crystal gazer who convinced Dee that he could channel the voice of angels. Keeley sometimes spelled his name as Kelly or went by Edward Talbot. Having aliases was probably helpful to the supposed medium who has been reported convicted of counterfeiting and possibly had his ears cut off as punishment. According to Sky History, Dee was so eager to talk to angels that when Keeley told him the angels wanted the two men to swap wives for an evening as payment for celestial communication, Dee agreed. 9 months later, Theodore Dee was born. Using Keeley as a go-between, Dee dialed up the Archangel Uriel and asked him if the Book of Soiga was the real deal. Uriel, speaking through Keeley, assured him that it was, but told him only the Archangel Michael was authorized to translate the tables. Apparently, Michael wasn't available, so you get Uriel. This exchange might be the source of the Book of Soiga's reputation as a cursed book, or sometimes it's known as the Book that Kills. At one point, Dee mentioned to Uriel that he told he'd die within 2.5 years if he ever read the encoded text. Uriel assured Dee that he'd live more than 100 years. About that reputation, though, most of the references we could find to the Book of Soiga being cursed texts only come from online sources, and there doesn't seem to be any real verifiable tales of misfortune attached to the book. Dee died in 1608 at the age of 81, so Uriel's thing of saying you'd lived to 100 didn't actually pan out, and the Book of Soiga changed hands a couple of times before vanishing from historical record. Fast forward 300 years in the summer of 1994, Deborah Harkness had just finished her doctoral dissertation, John Dee's Conversation with Angels, and was browsing through a catalog at Oxford's Bodleian Library when she found a reference to the Olidaria Sive Soiga, and she had the book brought up and soon found herself staring at the holy grail of Dee's scholarship. The experience inspired Harkness's first novel, A Discovery of Witches, which was kicked off to a best-selling trilogy and has since been adapted for television. In 1998, mathematician Jim Reeds cracked the code of the mysterious tables. Reeds discovered a pattern, including a frequency of a position certain letters in relation to other letters, or in his words, a letter is obtained by counting a certain number of letters after the letter immediately above it in the table. Reeds came up with a set of mathematical formula that allowed him to decipher the tables, each of which turned out to be based on a six-letter code word. But we still do not know the meaning of the code or the words or what messages the table meant to communicate, or even if there is a message. Mm. As for the curse, it appears to be a dud. According to Google Scholar, Reeds was still publishing as late as 2010. So Reed didn't die once he, you know, communicated this. But we don't know what the true message was.
No, I mean, and it's also the from God himself at some point in there, too, with the message.
Yes.
Which is the first and probably the last time.
So the only curse there was that Uriel told him he'd live to be 100. He didn't live to be 100.
No.
No. All right. So the next book is The Book of Abraham. This one sounds familiar to horror fans because it played a pivotal role in the 2016 movie A Dark Song. The Book of Abraham, or more formally, The Book of Sacred Magic of Abrahamlium the Mage, is a Jewish magic text that thought to date back to the 14th or 15th century, but it owes its current notoriety to the 19th and 20th century magicians who made up the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. One of the order's founders, S.L.M. Mathers, created the book's first English translation in the 1890s, working from a 1750 French version. According to the writer and occultist Lon Milo Duquette, a foreword to a 2006 edition, Mathers' translation caught on with his peers, and the Book of Abraham, or Abrahamlium, is also known in the magic community, became a key text for modern occultism, supposedly helping to inspire Aleister Crowley's system of magic with a K. Aleister Crowley, the famous occultist.
Hmm.
The centerpiece of the book is an elaborate multi-month ritual aimed at allowing the sorcerer to commune with the holy guardian angel, essentially their celestial other half. The trouble lies in what happens after a three-day period in which the magic book is locked in blissful intimacy with the angel, Duquette writes. Once the honeymoon is over, the sorcerer must summon up and conquer each and every unredeemed spirit of infernal regions. In other words, one might surmise, all the demons of hell. Supposedly, the angel will be there to coach the magician through all that conquering. But, you know, that sounds pretty rough. According to Duquette, the book's reputation as a cursed book might stem from the fact that it contains infrastructures of defeating the world's evil spirits. Surely, the spirits would prefer to be kept that information quiet, and if word got around that even owning this book would, you know, cause some problems. But it might be worth the gamble. Besides how to guides for summoning angels and demons, the book includes spells for turning someone into a donkey, conjuring up some juggling spirit monkeys, and compelling a spirit to the most important thing of all time. Panic! Can you guess what this spirit, what this book can allow you to have?
What?
You could conjure a spirit to bring you cheese.
Is that true?
That's not a curse.
It's a blessing.
It's not a curse. That's great. Yeah. I mean, I guess if evil spirits find out that you have this book that can possibly banish them, you can figure it out. They might get a little angry, but you know what?
Pros and cons.
I'm taking the chance.
Priorities.
I'm taking the chance. What about you? You taking the chance?
It's cheese.
I want the spirit to bring me cheese.
I mean, the fact that it's like your own personal server, but in spirit form, bringing you cheese, it's pretty impressive.
All right.
Take a risk.
Next one, The Orphan Story. The Orphan Story is a novel written by Spanish monk by the name of Martin de Leon Caridades, sometime between 1608 and 1615. Martin de Leon was originally planned to publish the novel in 1621 under the pseudonym Andres de Leon, but that never happened. According to The Guardian, it has been speculated that he left the book unpublished because he feared it would damage his standing in the Roman Catholic Church. He was appointed bishop in 1630 and archbishop as of 1650, so that's quite the jump in 20 years. The book was thought long lost, but in 1965, a Spanish scholar found what was thought to be the only surviving copy in New York archives of the Hispanic Society of America. There were several attempts to publish it, but none of them worked out, and rumors began to circulate that the orphan story was cursed. The project eventually found its way to a Peruvian Peruvian doctor named Belinda Palacios, who spent 2 years preparing the manuscript for publication. Soon after she signed an edit to the book, the warnings began. When I started working on it, a lot of people told me that the book was cursed and that people who start working on it begin to die. And she told The Guardian in 2018, and she was more specific in an interview with The Telegraph of the same year, "It's taken a while because people who have worked on it have died. One from a strange disease, one from a car accident, another from, you know, another thing or something else. According to the Endless Thread podcast, the casualties include a Spanish scholar named Antonio Rodriguez Moninon, who died in 1970, and a professor of Spanish named William C. Bryant. In 2017, 400 years after it was written, the orphan story was finally published. Pelayos has far been untroubled by the curse. She teaches Spanish-American literature at two universities in Switzerland, and in 2022, she published her own novel as well. How exciting.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
So, that one kind of sucked. A bunch of writers died writing on it, but it sounds like she broke the curse.
It's not as lively as the cheese curd.
I want my spirit to bring me cheese, man.
But, you know, at least the curse was broken, at least.
Yes. So. All right, next one is the Grand Grimoire.
Okay.
While some stories surrounding the allegedly cursed books can be chalked up to coincidence and superstitions, some tell another stranger tale, one that's tied to the power of literacy and a conspiracy to frighten people away from the books that threaten the status quo. In his 1898 text, The Book of Black Magic and Pacts, British occultist and scholar Arthur Edward Waite identifies the Grand Grimoire as one of the four specific and undisguised handbooks of black magic. The book contains detailed instructions for summoning Satan's right-hand man. Luciferge Rofocale. According to historian Owen Davies, a Grand Grimoire has been dated to 1702, but it more likely made its debut around 1750. It became a publishing sensation in his 2010 book, Grimoires, A History of Magic Books. Davies calls it the first explicitly diabolical mass-market grimoire. It's the book's popularity rather than its content that may have led to its reputation as a dangerous or cursed book. In France, the Grand Grimoire was one of the several spell books that were widely distributed in chapbook form and stolen bookstores around the 19th century. Back then, that's a big deal, guys. I need you to know. It's not like now where you could go to like your Second and Charles and they have a whole witchy-type section there. You could buy tarot cards and stuff. That was not the case back then. In fact, if you were selling that stuff back then, you could get your head cut off. I digress. Davies suggests that the church officials feared the book threatened their authority and embarked on a successful campaign to vilify them. People began to view the books like the Grand Grimoire as sinister. Even the simple act of buying one was thought to be dangerous. So let me pump it full of your head. You know, this book can bring demons in your house. So what do? You don't buy the book, right? You scare them through the church. Then there's the Great Omar book. You still with me, Count? You fall asleep?
I hear you.
All right. The book known as The Great Omar was a custom-made edition of a collection of stories by the 11th century Persian poet Omar Khayyam, K-H-A-Y-Y-A-M, who began to be known in the West after writer Edward Fitzgerald translated some of his verses in 1859. The book seems to be relatively untroubled until 1911, when the renowned bookbinder Francis Sengorski put the finishing touches on an elaborate edition commissioned by the manager of a London bookshop. Sengorski was given an unlimited budget for the project and only two mandates. The final product be worth whatever price Sengorski decided on, and that it is to be the greatest modern binding in the world.
Wow.
Sengorski labored over every detail for 2 years to get design elements exactly correct. He borrowed a human skull for reference and bribed a zookeeper to feed a live rat to a snake so he could see the angle of its jaws as the reptile fed. According to the BBC, he used 100 square foot of gold leaf, which is a lot, 5,000 pieces of leather, and more than 1,000 precious gemstones, including rubies, topaz, and emeralds. But once it was finished, the commissioning bookshop, which priced it at about $150,000 in U.S. dollars today, that book was worth $150,000 in today's money, had trouble selling it. I wonder why. They decided to give the American book market a try, but a dust up with American U.S. Customs officer sent the book back to London. It finally sold at auction to an American buyer for less than half of its original price. I would say somebody did really well on that book. $75,000 for something worth that's a good payday. So the great Omar hitched a ride to America after it's after it won its at auction. Would you like to know how the book was being sent to America?
How was it?
I'll give you a guess. It was sent via a very troubling way.
How?
The Titanic.
Oh, really? Wow, what a cursed. This is a very cursed story here, Bob.
10 weeks later, Zangorski drowned while on vacation with his family. He was only 37 years old. Zangorski's masterpiece was never recovered from the wreckage of the Titanic, but the Great Omar was recreated in the 1930s using the original plans. Bookbinder Stanley Bray finished a version just as World War II began. To protect the new edition from German bombs, it was placed in a vault on London's Fore Street, which ended up being one of the first sites targeted by Nazi warplanes. The safe that held the book survived the Blitz, but the book didn't. Mm. Temperatures inside the container rose so high that the book's leather and paper components were melted and charred. According to The Independent, only the jewels were spared. Mm. Bray was undeterred. He spent something like 4,000 hours over the course of 40 years trying to create a third edition of the Great Omar. This version seems to have escaped the curse. Bray lived to be 88, which is a good, you know, age to live to, and the third Omar is safely housed in the British Library. As for the source of the book's troubles, some suspect the trio of bejeweled peacocks on the cover. According to the Encyclopedia of Superstitions, some cultures believe that peacock feathers brought bad luck.
Bad luck, you say?
Man!
Well,
what a story, you know? I'm not done yet, but that one's wild.
All around, too, the Titanic thing, and just a bunch of circumstances here.
Not good ones either, man.
Not good ones. Cursed ones, that people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, next one is Written in Blood. Written in Blood is the work of Robert Nancy Hylum, who spent years enmeshed in Haiti's political turmoil. When the book was published in 1978, Robert was a retired Marine Corps colonel who served as a defense advisor of the Haitian government. He and his wife, a London-born journalist, had lived in Haiti for several years when they, as well as their Americans, were kicked out of the country in 1963 as relations deteriorated between the United States and government of Francois Papadoc Duliavar. Heinel's Washington Post obituary says he was declared persona non grata as a result of policy differences between the United States and Haiti's president. But the story surrounding the publication of Written in Blood tell an eerie story. According to the Washington Post, Nancy became so immersed in voodoo beliefs that she was convinced that she was a priestess with mystical powers. Duvler died in 1971, 7 years before the book was published. But according to Vikas Karti's 2007 book, Curses and Jinxes, the widow, Simone, apparently took offense to Written in Blood's unflattering depiction of the late leader and placed a curse on the book. The Washington Post says the manuscript was somehow lost at the printers, then stolen as it was being sent back to the publisher. When the book was eventually set for binding, the folding machine malfunctioned. The curse apparently extended to the book's publicity campaign. The first Washington Post reporter assigned to cover it was derailed by appendicitis. At home, the authors claimed that their non-electric clocks all stopped when they got it. Other misfortunes suffered by the book was less benign. Robert, the husband, was injured when a stage collapsed beneath him when he was delivering a speech, and a few days later, he was attacked by a dog walking near the couple's Embassy Row home. In May 1979, while the couples were vacationing in the French West Indies, just months after Written in Blood was published, Robert died suddenly of a heart attack. After his death, Nancy reportedly said, "There is a belief that the closer you get to Haiti, the more powerful the magic becomes." If the couple were in fact the victims of a curse, It wasn't the first time that the Duvlar family had allegedly turned to black magic to exact revenge on perceived enemies. According to the Encyclopedia of U.S.-Latin Relationships, the Duvalier claimed the assassination of John F. Kennedy Jr. in 1963 was the result of a curse he had placed on Kennedy after the young president, suspecting financial problems on the president of Haiti's part. He suspended aid to Haiti's previous year. Then there's the next book going up here, Tamino's Hell. Tamino's Hell dates back to 1919 and was included in Sakin, a book of poems by Japanese poet and songwriter Sajio Yasao. The poem seems to recount a young boy's journey through hell. It has been speculated that Tomino had committed an unforgivable sin and has been damned to hell as punishment. But according to the folklorist and translator Tara A. Devlin, Western readers are missing some of the most important context clues and cultural references, and Tamino's Hell is more of an allegory for a young man's deployment to the battlefield where he may have been killed in action. The poem's long journey to creepypasta stardom is the thought that started in 1974 when it helped inspire a film called Pastoral to Die in the County by avant-garde filmmaker Shuji Taramaya. Shuji lived 9 years after he made the movie, but somehow a legend was born that blamed his 1983's death on Tamino's Hell. Liver disease was actually probably the culprit, but I digress. At some point, rumors began to circulate about a college student had supposedly died after reading the poem. Thus, the stage set was set in 2004 when author and film critic Yomota Inikaru reportedly wrote, "If you by chance happen to read Tamino's Hell out loud, after you will suffer from a terrible fate which cannot be escaped." The poem made leap to the internet and is now a classic example of a creepypasta. And we all know what creepypastas are, you know, passed along spooky texts. The idea that Tamino's Hell is a curse seems to gain more traction in the West than in the poem's native Japan. People have reached out to two Japanese folklorist experts, and they have said it's a high possibility the idea of being a cursed poem originated in the West. And whether the poem had actually managed to make good on its alleged curse, Devlin writes that people have claimed to feel ill whilst reading this poem, but she points out that any physical effects can be chalked up to an auto-suggestion.
Just like that.
Hashtag panics take on all of these stories. Which one, do you have any belief that any of these are real?
Oh, Bob, yeah, for sure. You know, of course, the most delightful, cheese curds, spirit bringing.
Yeah, you want to read that book. You're like, I need to conjure a spirit to
bring
the craziest
has to be the Titanic situation when that book was supposed to be upon it. Just cursed from the beginning. But somebody's terrifying, more so terrifying than the others. But all in all, Bob, I at the end of the day, cursed is a good word for everything. Story here, I think. Cursed. I believe in curses.
Do you?
I think there's such a thing as curses, right?
You want to read Tamino's Hell live on air?
No.
See what happens?
What's the first one again? What was the first book? The book that weighed...
The Grimoire?
Yeah, we could get that out.
You want to bust out a 100-pound book?
That will take us probably... How long would that take us? I wonder.
Take a long time, probably. Yeah. But I don't know. You want to read Tamino's Hell to see if either one of us gets cursed?
I'm not looking forward to that, Bob. I think
look, man, I've had enough bad luck over the course cursed, of the past few months, over the past couple of years. I don't need some cursed Japanese poem to aid me along in my early death due to stress.
Probably not best to have that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Count, do you have any closing words for our fans this week?
Bob, continue to enjoy what's left of the summer solstice. It's ending pretty rapidly here, and then the veil will really start, really pick up and start thinning there.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and the Count, we just want to wish you all sweet dreams. Mom, good night. I know you're listening by the radio. Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of all. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable in doing it is, whatever it is that you want to be doing. Everybody, good night. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
memoriam development.